With this Arkansas music feature, I'm Mike Doyle. Wayne Jackson has passed away. His name isn't as well known as those of some other trumpet players like Louis Armstrong, Miles Davis, or Herb Alpert. But if you pick up almost any of the great R&B or soul records made in Memphis or Muscle Shoals during the 60s, you'll see Wayne Jackson's name on the credits. He was a member of the Memphis Horns, an ensemble that once had as many as 6 members and played on some of the biggest hits on top 40 radio stations all over the country in the era of Sam and Dave, Otis Redding, Al Green, and Elvis. They recorded and toured with A-list entertainers. By the time Southern Soul began to fade a little for disco to appear, the Memphis Horns included only 2 members, Andrew Love on tenor sax, and Wayne Jackson on trumpet. Wayne began playing trumpet in his youth as a member of the West Memphis, Arkansas High School Marching Band. That's where he grew up. And Gary Gazaway, a Northeast Arkansas trumpeter who has an impressive resume of his own, says the nightclubs in Wayne Jackson's hometown of West Memphis were training grounds for the musicians who went on to get steady work in Memphis.
Wayne said that's where everything came from. Plantation Club is where everybody, because in Memphis back in those days, they shut everything down on Beale Street and everything at midnight because they didn't want the excess partying. But when you go across the bridge and went to West Memphis over there, and it was not far from
Poncho's Restaurant, right?
Poncho's Restaurant. I can remember that thing. And he said back in the 30s and the 40s, that's where soul music came from, that club, not Memphis. He was in band, and he was a great trumpet player in West Memphis band, and he was 15 years old, and he got involved with the group The Marquees, and that was the very first group that really started on Stax.
Gary Gazaway and Wayne Jackson connected as musicians when both were living in Nashville, Tennessee in the late 80s.
I played a club over in Nashville called the Triple Crown. It was a jazz club type thing, and I had the house band there. Wayne came in there one night. He came up to me after on a break and said, boy, I sure like your trumpet playing. And I said, well, thank you very much. And he says, I played the trumpet. And I said, really? I said, what's your name? He said, Wayne Jackson. I said, oh, good God, don't tell me. I said, I have admired you since I saw you playing with Otis Redding in 1967 and 68 when my dad took me over to that Stax Vault with you. I said, you know, it's just such an honor. And he said to me, he goes, well, he said, I wouldn't say this normally, but he said, but so far you're my favorite trumpet player.
After each learned that the other was from Northeast Arkansas, they'd been friends about 6 months when Wayne Jackson offered Gary Gazaway the opportunity to join him in Joe Cocker's horn section on a tour that was to result in a live Joe Cocker concert album.
And I need a trombone player. I saw you play trombone on your jazz gig. He said, could you cover it? And I said, well, sure. And so that particular album, we went out to Seattle and we rehearsed. And then we started doing some shows out there in L.A. and different places. And then we all met in St. Louis, starting at the Fox Theater, and they had the recording truck that would record 7 or 8 shows and pick the best out of those shows for this album, Joe Cocker Live, Capitol Records.
That Joe Cocker tour was plagued with problems at every stop. Gazaway's trombone was smashed by a falling chandelier in a hotel in St. Louis. In Cincinnati, the guitar amplifiers were broken and developed a hum. It looked like the producers weren't going to have enough good material for an album. Then they reached their final stop, a smaller theater in Lowell, Massachusetts.
Man, I don't know what happened, but that last show that we did in Lowell, we started that thing off, and it was a completely, totally perfect show. What is on that record from the first song to the added cut at the end, they've got one added cut studio recording of Joe singing David Lynn Jones's
Living in the Promised Land.
Living in the Promised Land. That was the added bonus cut.
How about that for an Arkansas connection there? David Lynn Jones, who is from Izzard County.
That's how I met him. When we played in Nashville, he came out.
Okay.
Joe did it on the show. But they did a studio recording of that they'd already done. And they just added it to this Joe Cocker Live record that came out in 90. It was all the older stuff, all of his best stuff, re-recorded digital. And now Rolling Stone magazine has voted that record to be the number one best live rock and roll recording ever made.
With the passing of Wayne Jackson, all the Memphis Horns are gone. Andrew Love, the other remaining member of the duo, died in 2012. Gary Gasaway says the Memphis Horns were great teachers.
Man, in that little short period that we were on the road together, I mean, it was like, whoa, I saw it all. I saw how they would listen to the singer and everything, and they would add their little pads and stuff in a way that nobody else could have done it like them, because they had an uncanny way about laying stuff in there that was just enough for your ears to really punch it, but it would never be corny sounding. That's why Sting wanted them. That's why Peter Gabriel, Steve Winwood roll with it. They are an enigma to me. They're both icons in my mind, American heritage music.
Another Northeast Arkansas resident who worked with Wayne Jackson on some major hit records was the singer Sandy Rhodes. Sandy, her husband in the 1970s, Charles Chalmers, and her sister Donna were the background singers on all of Al Green's number one hits produced by Willie Mitchell. Sandy Rhodes said that West Memphis native Wayne Jackson was memorable as a colleague as well as a musician.
I came to know Wayne through Charlie Chalmers, who was playing a lot of horn sessions with Wayne Jackson. Wayne and Andrew and Charlie, they did sessions at Sam Phillips Studio and at Stax and at the American Studios. And so that's how I met Wayne. Great guy.
As I've said before, I think, when I've interviewed you and your family, this was ground zero for Memphis and American popular music at that time, the 60s and early 70s, right?
It absolutely was. Donna and I started singing in late 60s and early 70s as a vocal group. And man, there were so many between Memphis and Muscle Shoals, I must say. We were cutting every week. We were going somewhere doing singing backup on someone, from, you know, Paul Anka to Al Green to Jackie DeShannon. I mean, it was amazing how much music was coming through that era, you know.
And there was a lot of horn music on those hits, wasn't there, Sandy?
Oh, yes, it was. That really, you know, the horns and voices on so many of those Memphis Soul records was such a marker of that type of music. I mean, it was just like, if you took the horns and voices away, it would have changed the whole sound. You know what I'm saying? It was soul. It was funky. It was hooks. You know, you would have a hook. Sometimes the horn section would be the hook. They'd play a riff that was noted all through the song that your ears automatically went to. Or sometimes the voices had the hook. And that might be, you know, like Ride Sally Ride. I mean, that was what you remember about Mustang Sally, you know, the hook. And so, yeah, it was all unique. I mean, you know, there were different sounds in some of those different records, from the pop to the rhythm and blues, but some of the same singers and pickers and horn section were on all those.
Sandy Rhodes said there was a real fellowship among the musicians in the studio.
If we were going to do voices, vocal group stuff, it would be after the horn section, and they would probably stack where, you know, they would stack the horns, and then they would stack the voices, which made for a cleaner, bigger sound. But there were many times that, you know, we would just be sitting around waiting for the horn section to get through, and then we'd do our thing.
So you might interact with Wayne and Andrew after they got through on their way out of the room or something.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We'd hang around for their session, and then hang around and listen to what we were going to do. It was a mutual admiration group there.
It sounds like there was a lot of hanging around. It was a necessary part of recording back then.
It was, and it was a lot of fun. I remember several times at High Records with Charlie and Wayne and Andrew, and they'd be having so much fun that Willie would finally say, "Hey, guys, come on, we're cutting a record here." You know, they'd be laughing and just having a good time. It was always fun, and, you know, always good times. And Wayne was, he was a personality and heck of a trumpet player.
Singer Sandy Rhodes, and before that, trumpeter Gary Gasaway, remembering their fellow Arkansan, Wayne Jackson, a member of the Memphis Horns, and the last of the Memphis Horns, who died in a hospital in Memphis Tuesday night, June 21st, after suffering congestive heart failure. Wayne Jackson was 74. With this Arkansas music feature for KASU, I'm Mike Dorman.